Hi, I'm Rachel T.
Hi, I'm Eva.
Hi, I'm Rachel G.
We are all Girl Scouts, and this is WGXC ACRA.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
You've tuned into All Together Now, WGXC's regional look at the news from Hudson Valley and the Capital Region, from the Catskills to the Berkshires and beyond. I'm Tom Rowe, and today you'll hear all sorts of local news updates, weather, interviews, and more, plus community events and the song of the day on All Together Now.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood.
This is Galen Joseph Hunter, Executive Director of Wave Farm. Our programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered in Greene County by the Greene County Council on the Arts, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC sustaining supporters who provide critical monthly support to keep WGXC 90.7 FM on the air. Thank you for listening.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Carol Friedman of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Paul Kirby reports for the Daily Freeman that U.S. Representative Antonio Delgado said February 19th that the House should collect evidence regarding conduct by U.S. Attorney General William Barr that appeared to benefit President Donald Trump. Quote, I think given the role of Congress and given that we have oversight responsibilities and that part of our job is to collect facts and evidence and to get to a place where you can make an informed decision that is not based on just information we are gleaning from news accounts, I think we have a responsibility before we say one way or the other that we take those appropriate steps, unquote. The Rhinebeck Democrat said during an hour-long interview at the Daily Freeman office in Kingston. However, Delgado declined to comment on whether he thinks Barr should resign until after an investigation is complete. In a wide-ranging conversation, Delgado also discussed climate change, immigration, his support for H.R. 8, universal background check, and the legalization and regulation of marijuana. Delgado is seeking his second two-year term. He is so far being challenged by Republicans Ola Hawatame and Kyle Van Dewater, as well as Green Party candidate Steve Greenfield.
Sarah Tapton is reporting for Columbia Green Media. News has surfaced of a proposal to build a construction and demolition debris processing facility on the Athens waterfront. Athens Stevedoring and Environmental Development is looking to import 8,400 tons of construction and demolition materials weekly to a 6.1-acre site off North Washington Street adjacent to the Athens boat launch. The debris will be transported by barge from Alcoa Recycling in Brooklyn. After processing, the materials would then be trucked to locations throughout upstate New York. The project was brought to the attention of the village board by the group
Keep It Green, which was formed in response to Wheelabrator Technologies' failed attempt to construct an ash monofill in Catskill, requiring the trucking in of 445,000 tons of waste per year. Athens resident Diana Abadie said the village boat launch is very popular, and if the facility is planning to operate 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, and I quote, "Even the beauty of a fishing expedition or a kayak trip would be disrupted by noise and dust," end quote. Abadie also expressed safety concerns about the increased presence of barges as well as more truck traffic. Former EPA Regional Administrator Judith Ink said, and I quote, "This project potentially has a serious environmental impact. C&D debris is not just dirt and rocks. It's called cocktailing, where toxic substances are blended in," end quote. The materials can include lead paint and shingles containing asbestos. Ink said a full environmental review is in order, but before anything else happens, the applicant should hold a community meeting. She said, and I quote, "This should not happen behind closed doors," end quote. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com.
Sarah Trafton is reporting for Columbia Green Media that Greene County lawmakers discussed recent changes to the eligibility requirements for state census funding that would make counties unqualified to work directly on the U.S. Census. Under legislation proposed by Governor Andrew Cuomo, $30 million would have been locally deployed to improve census accuracy. And in December, the Greene County Legislature agreed to apply for $87,000 of that funding. At the same time, the county was authorized to conduct an awareness campaign. Under the recent changes, approved nonprofits are required to apply through the county for the funds, and the county would then make the application for the grant on the organization's behalf. If the funding is approved, the county would then distribute the funds to the nonprofit. As of today, quote, "As of today, the list of nonprofits has not come out," unquote, Deputy Greene County Administrator Warren Hart said. The deadline for the application is March 2nd. Libraries are automatically pre-approved, Caro Library Director Deborah Kamicki said. She urged legislators to find a way to obtain the funding. Quote, "We need to get a message to them why it's important for everybody to be counted," unquote, Kamicki said. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com.
Michelle Brindenbach is reporting for NewYorkUpstate.com. U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand said February 18th, social media giants are taking advantage of users for trillions of dollars and must be subject to oversight. New York's junior senator last week introduced legislation that would create a data protection agency, an independent federal agency with the authority to enforce data protection rules created by itself or Congress. Gillibrand made the comments during a town hall meeting in Syracuse. The town hall meeting was Gillibrand's second since taking office in 2009. During the meeting, Gillibrand also called for the expansion of Medicaid and Social Security benefits and a student loan forgiveness program for public servants. Linda Brown Robinson, president of the Syracuse Anaconda chapter of the NAACP, moderated the event, and the crowd asked questions on a variety of topics, including health care, student loan forgiveness, and foreign affairs. Read the full story at NewYorkUpstate.com.
Emma Ryan reports for the Legislative Gazette that a bill intended to provide veterans with easier access to state parks and wildlife areas passed the State Assembly unanimously February 13th. It is now waiting for a floor vote in the Senate. The bill is sponsored by Senator Brian Benjamin and Assemblymember Dee Dee Barrett and would require a study on the barriers that veterans face in accessing the outdoors and identify ways to fix them. The goal of the legislation is to promote the outdoors as a form of therapy for veterans suffering from physical disabilities, post-traumatic stress disorder, and substance abuse. According to the bill text, quote, "Recent studies have found that time outdoors can be valuable adjunct therapy in addition to more traditional types of health care," unquote. Signed into law, state officials would be required to study the obstacles veterans face in taking advantage of the natural outdoor resources of New York State and make plans to eliminate and reduce those barriers. Read the full story in the Legislative Gazette.
Abby Hoover is reporting for Columbia Green Media.
On Tuesday, February 18th, Peebles, an anchor store in the Fairview Plaza in Greenport for 15 years, reopened its doors as Gordman's. Stage Stores Incorporated, the Houston-based parent company of both stores, announced last year it would convert most of its stores into the off-price retail outlet. Republican State Senator Daphne Jordan attended the ribbon cutting, noting the new store is an exciting addition to the community. Jordan said each Gordman's store employs between 20 and 30 people. The company began converting stores in February and by the third quarter of 2020 expects to be operating approximately 700 small market Gordman's off-price stores nationwide. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com.
Bill Sanderson is reporting for the New York Daily News that former Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver has filed an appeal with the full panel of the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, asking that the four remaining charges against him be thrown out. Silver wants the court to dismiss the parts of his conviction upheld in January by three of the court's 13 judges. Silver's legal ploy faces long odds, said Rachel Barco, a professor at NYU School of Law. Quote, it's such a Hail Mary, unquote, Barkow said. Quote, the Second Circuit in particular just doesn't like to take cases in bank, unquote. And it is especially tough given that the three-judge panel's decision was unanimous, she said. But Silver may be laying grounds for taking the matter up to the U.S. Supreme Court, said attorney Harry Sandick. More appeals extend the time Silver, 76, avoids prison on the four charges that remain against him. Silver was indicted for bribery in Manhattan federal court in February 2015. After his first conviction was overturned, he was convicted a second time in May 2018. Read the full story in the Daily News.
Judy Ripe is reporting for the Times Herald Record. Hudson Valley farmers are changing how much they grow and what they grow in order in response to the requirements imposed by the state's new farm labor law. They are doing everything they can to avoid paying workers overtime, one of the law's mandates they say they cannot afford. Alex Cocott, co-owner of Harvest Queen Farms in Orange County, said, and I quote, it's going to be a transition year, end quote. Cocott has already decided he will no longer grow salad greens because it is a labor-intensive crop and can easily push a crew into overtime. Instead, he will concentrate on onions and soybeans. He said, and I quote, there's no labor with soybeans. I've got the equipment to plant them myself, harvest them myself, end quote. Other farmers will shrink the size of their farms, cutting back on the volume of some crops and with some abandoning fields and orchards. The transition was made more difficult due to the confusion over some of the law's mandates. It remains unclear if extended family members and supervisors are subject to the law and about whether the scheduled day of rest for workers has to be the same day every week or can be any day in seven. The changes could result in local farms reducing their footprint in New York City markets, a way Hudson Valley farmers have expanded their business over the years. Read the full story at PoughkeepsieJournal.com.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
Forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Thursday, partly sunny with a high near 27 degrees. Thursday night, partly cloudy with a low of around 10. And on Friday, sunny with a high near 31 degrees. Friday night, clear with a low of around 20. And that's your weather update from WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties. Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page.
and copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
On Thursday, February 20th, a public hearing will be held by the Greene County Industrial Development Agency at 270 Mansion Street about the Empire Riverfront Ventures project that will involve the restoration and adaptive reuse of a former industrial site on the village of Kasaki Riverfront. Teens and tweens will work with local artisan Bergen Hendrickson to create their own unique designs for caps, t-shirts, and patches. All materials and lunch will be provided 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Hudson Area Library. The Ancrum Town Board holds a public hearing on a proposed local law amending Article 5 of the 2014 zoning law at Ancrum Town Hall on County Route 7 at 6:30 p.m. Chess tables are set out on the dance floor and chess sets are provided, or bring your own. DJs Effie and Otto Hauser spin deep cuts from their extensive vinyl collections. There should be a live webcast of the entire show at WGXC.org and 90.7 FM, beginning around 7 p.m. from the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. The Club Helsinki Pro Jam is a bi-monthly jam session featuring dozens of professional musicians from the greater Hudson Valley region. The event welcomes all working musicians in the region to sit in for a freewheeling jam session at 8 p.m. Jesse Mallon and Diane and the Gentlemen perform at the Colony Cafe in Woodstock at 8 p.m. On Friday, February 21st, Living Poetry at the Library at 6 p.m. with poets Mahogany L. Brown and Jive Poetic, an evening of poetry, prose, and performance. A discussion and reception follows the reading. This program is a part of the Hudson Area Library's inaugural Curator in Residence program with Mahogany L. Brown. The TSL Bookspace on Columbia Street in Hudson presents an evening with Lydia Davis and Bernadette Meyer, with an introduction by Barbara Epler at 7 p.m. Colleen McCracken, immigrant, ex-con, and domestic abuse survivor, invites us into her sewing shop, where we're introduced to Eleanor Roosevelt, Jackie Kennedy, Lady Bird Johnson, and Mary Todd Lincoln in this performance of The First Ladies Coalition, created and performed by Ginger Grace and directed by Austin Pendleton, at the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill at 7:30 p.m. Death Trap is a suspense dramatic thriller with multiple murders, presented by the Two of Us Productions in collaboration with the Kapaki Grange, February 14th through February 23rd. Blueberry are based locally and play R&B and pop. The Black Jolt Illusion play psych rock, punk blues with surf harmonies. There should be a live webcast of their entire show from the Avalon Lounge in Catskill at WGXC.org and 90.7 FM beginning around 9 p.m. On Saturday, February 22nd, during school winter recess, Saturday Minecraft Club facilitator, local artist, and game enthusiast Sonia Rusco will host Minecraft Marathon for kids and teens. Limited spots available. There will also be an 11 a.m. intermission and lunch at the Hudson Area Library starting at 10 a.m. Cook and compete or just come to eat at the Caro Development Foundation Chili Cook-Off at Gallagher's on Main Street from 12 to 3 p.m. Proceeds support the Caro Development Foundation's efforts to revitalize Main Street. Representative Antonio Delgado will hold his 35th town hall meeting since 2017 and fourth in Columbia County. Residents of Columbia County and surrounding areas are encouraged to attend and to ask questions and share their priorities with the congressman at the Churchtown Firehouse on Route 27 in Churchtown at 3 p.m. William Lawrence is a songwriter and multi-instrumentalist. Allison Olander is a singer-songwriter from Baltimore who lives in the Hudson Valley. CK and the Rising Tide are led by Curtis K. Flack. They all perform at the Beverly on Foxhall Avenue in Kingston at 7 p.m. Rebecca Ruth Borer and Peter McPartland perform music at the Spotty Dog Books and Ale on Warren Street in Hudson at 7 p.m. New England sister duo Ari and Mia, on tour with Australian singer-songwriter Lucy Wise, perform an array of original folk songs at Metabee Farm in Hillsdale on Harlemville Road at 7 p.m. Spoken word artist Oliver Traeger is a writer, performer, visual artist, educator, and Dig Infinity playwright and performer. They take the stage at the Hudson Underground on Warren Street at 7 p.m. Colleen McCracken, immigrant, ex-con, and domestic abuse survivor, invites us into her sewing shop where we're introduced to Eleanor Roosevelt, Jackie Kennedy, Lady Bird Johnson, and Mary Todd Lincoln in this performance of The First Ladies Coalition. Created and performed by Ginger Grace and directed by Austin Pendleton, the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill at 7:30 p.m.
This is Eli.
This is Esme.
This is Everett.
We're from Prairieville.
This is Ethel. I'm from Iowa.
You're listening to WGSC.
90.7 FM.
Guam, Catskill, Hudson.
Creative Community Radio.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Stella Yoon of Hillsdale, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I'm a student at Hudson High School, and I'm also from Hudson.
I'm Lena. I am a student from MC Smith, and I am from Hudson.
Hi, my name is AJ. I go to school at Leibri, and I have recently moved up here from Manhattan, and now I live in Elizaville.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books Yay! We love, books we hate.
All that good stuff.
And books in between.
Things. Yeah, and bookish things.
Average books.
Average books.
Yeah. And also, I'm kind of mad at my friend saying that bookish isn't a word.
Bookish is a word, I think.
Yeah. Do you know what it means?
It means no. You're bookish. I don't know. How do you define that?
Well,
it's a word if it has a meaning that is understood.
Yeah.
Oh, my friend.
That's what I say.
My friend pretended to pull out an imaginary dictionary, and I'm like, did you pull that out of your pants?
Bookish is a word. Quote, Emily Schmiedes, Hudson Area Library Director.
I feel like a library director is a fairly accurate reliable source when it comes
You're
to
You're the
words.
Director?
But also from Oxford.
Oh.
Bookish, Oxford adjective of a person or way of life devoted to reading and studying rather than worldly interests.
Me.
Or
me.
Of language or writing, literary in style or illusion.
That's me.
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 I'm illusion. Tag yourself, I'm illusion.
I'm going to tag myself as the writing part.
Okay.
Oh, I like
I'm going to tag myself as anything that has to do with books and whatever I love.
Nice. I like worldly interests as well.
Yeah.
But I also love books.
And
I don't think they're exclusive.
I put bookish as one of my traits, and I also put my very most trait that Emily and I think Amelia knows about when we first started the show, hungry, which I am now.
Me too. The struggle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyways, we're excited because Amelia's back. We missed her the past couple weeks.
I got sick. I couldn't. I had a bad throat.
Well, thank you for not bringing your sickness to the studio.
Yeah.
For sparing us. But we did miss you. And we're wondering if you've been reading anything interesting.
I haven't been reading anything. But recently, the new semester started and I got into my creative writing class. So I'm actually writing some stuff now and learning about some really interesting like story formats, like two-sentence horror stories or two-sentence stories in general. Six-word stories, which tend to turn into horror stories just because of how up for interpretation they are. And today we learned about microfiction, which is fiction under 500 or under 1,000 words. The definitions varied when I looked for it, which also, because of their short length and, like, very up to interpretation, like, things can also be horror stories. My class seems to lean into the horror aspect of writing much more, mostly because of the books we've probably read before. I mean, we read The Handmaid's Tale. We've at this point, we've been conditioned to go into the darker implications of things.
Yeesh. That's neat. Yeesh.
But we started writing some six-word stories and two-sentence horror stories, which we started peer editing. It's just very interesting because sometimes, compared to reading like a longer book, it's just... Hold on. This sentence started out with me having a clear path of somewhere to go. And it's just falling apart. I'm trying to compare it between, like, reading a whole novel and reading a microfiction or a short story.
Sure. Maybe it's
a short story. Yeah, it's easier. And not easier in terms of reading level or skill, but, like, just lighter reading. But then it's also interesting because it also can be anything but light, like with the horror stories and with the microfiction we read today, which was a fairly dark subject matter. It's not, like, light in terms of content, but it's interesting how someone can get that same feeling from a short story as a longer novel would take to, like, with like 500 pages. These people achieve that like feeling and that mood within 500 words or less, and I think that's really cool, and I think it's really cool that we're learning about it.
Could you tell us maybe a short story? Have you written any?
I wrote a few. If I remember right, I remember one of my short horror stories. It went along the lines of, I had the dream again with dust filling my lungs. I've had this dream before. All I have to do is pray that when I wake up, I'll be able to reach for my inhaler. So I prefer to go for the real fears, like suffocation being that one. My friend has a real fear that the world is a simulation, like it's something she can't stand to the point where she can't watch The Matrix. It really, really disturbs her. So because I'm awful, I wrote one specifically for her along those lines. And she got mad at me, but... But, you know, she went at me because she wrote a two-sentence horror story about teeth, so I say it's fair.
That's interesting. Oh. I would love to hear more.
Both of us just preying on each other's greatest fears. Yeah.
Can you? If you come across any other two-sentence stories that you think are really good, you should bring them
to share. I should definitely
share those on the radio.
Yeah, I believe our six word stories have been printed out and like put on the classroom wall. And the same thing's going to happen with two-sentence ones. So if I see any good ones, I can take a picture and read them.
I just thought of one because you just mentioned thinking about others' fears. And I thought of my own fear. Well, it's kind of a babyish fear, but I still believe that there's a monster somewhere in the house. And because we used to live in the city, they were so noisy, I didn't really believe in that so much. But now, since it's so quiet and eerie, there's a tree right outside my room. And even though I close the curtains as tight as they will go, sometimes I see a shadow.
When you're in a more populated place, I have noticed that, like, fears of, like, intruders go down. Like, I've been in hotels in, like, fairly large cities for dance competitions. And when I'm in those hotels, the funny thing is, even though I'm in an unfamiliar place and something that would probably creep any other person out, I'm not as scared because I know that there are people around me. And if I were to yell, someone would hear me, which is different in your house. So it's weird all the different forms they can take because... One thing about the whole monster under the bed thing is that, like, when you're little, you're still scared that there's a monster under your bed or in your closet. When you get older, that monster might not be so much a monster, but someone who may have broken into your house, which is home invasion is, like, a huge fear as well.
Sure.
That's, like, very common.
I thought of a two-sentence story to go with that fear.
Mm-hmm.
Waiting in the darkness of my bed, trying not to blink.
Yeah. Mm.
That's as far as I can go because I'm trying not to think of going even farther because I'm afraid that I'm going to scare myself.
Well, it's also the integrity of a two-sentence
story. So you need Amelia to write the true horror story for you. So. Sometimes it's too scary to write about your own fears. But because get Amelia to do it for you.
Because then it goes even bigger and bigger.
Oh, yeah.
And bigger.
Like, I could not write anything having to do with teeth or orthodontal or dentistry. I would work myself into, like, a whole fit. I would not have a good time if I tried to write about that.
But don't blame you for that.
I have a huge fear of the dentist and anything having to do with teeth.
Yeah, I remember when we were talking about Smile by Rana Telgemeier that you were like, nope.
Yeah, I can't.
I don't blame you.
And that book isn't even meant to be like horrific. It really is more of a coming of age book, but just because of the subplot of the teeth, I cannot stand it. It freaks me out way too much to read.
Mm-hmm. The braces part actually freaks me out too, because she said that the brackets are on your... if you don't want to listen to this, maybe
no,
you
I'm
should...
okay with the brackets. Like, that's normal things that people do. It's the stuff that isn't normal, like teeth falling out when they shouldn't. That is the root of my fear. But general orthodontal, like, procedures, although if I were to have them done to me, they would scare me. Just hearing descriptions of them doesn't bother me too much, because those are normal procedures.
And so it said that they have the brackets on her teeth. She takes out the wires, and then he pulls it really hard. And
they
tightens it even more, like...
I've heard from people who have braces that does hurt a lot when it's done. I've read from people who have it done that it actually doesn't hurt as much when it's being done so much as it does afterwards in the next few days. That's what my friends say who had braces.
What do you think, Lena?
Lena
has braces.
Yeah,
right?
You do.
You still have them, right?
Is it more uncomfortable when they're being tightened or like after?
It's more uncomfortable when they're being put on, because my mouth was starting to hurt. Because remember that part where they were working on her teeth and they had that little thing to keep her mouth open? It was uncomfortable. I just wanted my skin to just snap so I could just leave and so I can go to the hospital.
I have such a hard time with that too. I don't like having to keep my mouth open for all that time, even for a normal dentist visit. Mm-hmm. I would have had braces if I hadn't been terrified and said, you know what, no. But I was fitted for them, I guess is the right word, with that awful gel stuff. Mm. And I'm not going to lie, I was 16. There's no reason for me to have acted the way I did, but I actually broke down in tears while this was happening to me. I was not having a good time. I was so scared. That orthodontist was the most patient man I've ever met, because I'm sitting here sobbing. It was not good. It was not a fun time.
There's another part about it, and it's not only when she had the braces on, is when she went to the endodontist. That part, then she had to do the scraping of the teeth, and then she was like, oh, why don't you just give her another Tylenol? And in the picture she drew them, it was they were evil with the eyebrows going down, and it was so scary.
Yeah, it doesn't help. Like, the illustration, the fact that it's so cartoony, it almost makes it worse. I feel like I'd be less disturbed if I knew this story was supposed to freak me out, but I know it's not supposed to freak me out, and I'm just freaked out by it anyway, which makes it even more disconcerting.
Yeah, it's like...
I do like drama, though, and I haven't read Guts yet, but drama is probably my favorite that she's written so far. I liked the main character's purple hair, and I think that's the first thing that ever actually made me really want to get my hair dyed, was reading that book and seeing cool purple hair.
And when that book first came out, my Bound by Books co-host, what it inspired in them was wanting to try bubble tea. Because the characters have bubble tea in the book, and nobody knew what it was.
It's so good.
Yeah. I desperately want to like bubble tea or boba tea or whatever you call it.
It's called boba, but people say bubble.
Yeah, because it looks like bubbles.
And it's cute.
But I don't like boba, personally.
I desperately, desperately wanted to like boba/bubble tea. I've tried it many, many times until finally my mom was like, you don't like this. Don't like this. It's actually a mixture of two things I don't like to drink, which is milk and tea. I don't know why I thought I would like the liquid as it is. And then the bobas are just weird and jelly-ish and weird. And I try to drink more to rinse down the boba, and I just end up getting more boba in my mouth. And it's like, oh no, it never ends.
You have to chew it and then swallow. That's actually my mom's favorite part.
Yeah.
When mom is halfway through it, I just...
You just have to
do you want the
spoon.
Do you want the bubbles?
You gotta eat it out the bubbles.
It was like, do you want the bubbles? Because I will absolutely will eat them if you don't want them.
I don't know. Maybe it's the fact that they had so many different flavors of the tea that I thought eventually maybe someday I'd find a kind I like, but it's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
No matter how much I want to be cool and be able to walk around the mall sipping boba tea, I'm just not going to be that person.
Yeah. Stick with frappuccinos.
So speaking of boba tea, Lena, do you have any book you want to talk about? That was my very
That was
good
a really
segue.
Weird segue, but it was I appreciated that segue so much.
The book does not actually have to do with boba tea.
Yeah. But it starts with the same word.
I didn't have a book to talk about because I was mostly reading the Okay Witch, but I'm going to read again just to trigger my friend. And also
to trigger your friend?
Yes.
Why?
How does that trigger
because
your friend?
Why isn't she okay with the Okay Witch book?
She's like, oh, you're done with the book? Finally! And then I'm like, but I'm going to reread it.
Oh, does she want...
Does she
want to read the book?
Yeah, whenever
why would you do that to her?
Because whenever I get a book, she steals my book and then it reads it. And I have enough
it's
of...
my turn.
I've had enough of it.
This is an even exchange, I guess.
Yeah.
This is a little eye for an eye thing going on.
But did you like
I guess
it
I can...
on first read?
Yeah. But I'm just gonna keep renewing the book
until
she
the library
just
kills you.
Yeah, until the library is like,
until
God,
death.
Woman.
Speaking of witch books, I bought some from Barnes & Noble with my, man, this inspired a thing. I don't know what I hit here, but okay. I bought, like, 3 books about Wicca, Wicca religion.
What's Wicca?
It's that's what these books are going to tell me. as from what I know, it's basically about instead of worshipping a god or one god, you defer to, like, forces of nature and energy, and it has a lot to do with crystals and seasonal changes and Yule and all that kind of stuff. Basically, I bought these books because I wanted to understand it because I had been doing research on the internet, and the internet was telling me 15 different things, so I decided to just choose one source and learn from this one source, and this one source will be what I deal with. So I bought 3 books by the same author. All but one were from the same author. I'm already lying. I'm already not going from the same source.
It's okay.
My philosophy is already falling apart,
maybe it
but you know
just
what?
Be
it's
books.
Okay.
Your source can just be books.
Yeah. Yeah. I seem to trust books a bit more than the internet because the internet can be written by anybody, but I can actually like look up these authors and figure out what their like views are because the authors are Wicca practitioners. So I'm like, okay, this is cool. And then I open the first page and it's like, cool. Wicca religions, visualization, all that kind of stuff. And then it goes into, like, how to build an altar. And I'm like, wait. Slow down. You're moving too fast. What
like,
are we
I'm
talking
not there
about?
Yet.
I'm not... I haven't gotten to that point yet. What am I... Explain to me what I'm even, like, worshipping here. What's going on? It's like, and it's going into all these details about how, like, the north and south and east and west, how the altar should be positioned a certain place in the home or in the room to, like, the north, east, south, or west, or whatever.
You need to get a compass.
Yeah, that's it. Like, I have to pull out my compass app on my phone just to start this setting up, and then I don't even know. And then it's like, you gotta have, like, 15 different candles of 15 different colors or scents. And I'm like, whoa. And then here's your crystals. And I'm like, I don't have half of those. Hold on. I'm so confused. My friend is the crystal friend in our group, and I have so many crystals just lined up on my windowsill from her. I don't know what to do with any of them. I literally have no idea what to do with any of them.
Awesome.
Wow.
But yeah, it's wild, and that's just the first book. I haven't even started the other two.
Oh my god.
I haven't even started the other two. I'm just like sitting here like, okay. And it's like, yeah, choose your patron god or goddess. And I'm like, whoa, wait. From what religion? Are we talking Egyptian, Greek? Is it up to me? What? I need a bit more context here. I'm just like, what's going on? It's wild. It's absolutely wild. But it is very, very...
I think you should have stuck with the internet.
It is very, very fascinating and interesting to read.
Yeah.
Does it have cool pictures?
No, but it does have a very, very gorgeous cover with a pentacle and like a bunch of gold leaf on it, which is really pretty.
Are your parents worried about you?
My mom actually straight up asked me, are you a witch, after I bought all these books. And I said, no, not yet.
Not yet.
Oh, witch buddies.
You're like, give it time, mom. Give it time.
I'm just like, give it time, mom. Hold on.
Amelia, can we be witch buddies?
Sure. Do you know more than I do? I'm looking to anyone at this point.
What if next week we came on the radio and we're like, welcome to Wicca Friends.
Welcome to Bound by Wicca.
Bound by Wicca.
Or like, welcome to Bound by Wicca. And today we're going to be talking about crystals and our magic spells. But
no,
I know a magic spell.
Crystals, I guess, are that crystals, certain crystals do have a lot of energy. Mm-hmm. Like, I did buy one for myself that my friend did not buy me. That's, and I don't remember what it's called. It's a pale blue thing. Which is supposed to help with over auditory, like, overstimulation and all that kind of stuff. Which is a thing I have a bit of a problem with. Yeah. So I bought this for myself, and I'm like, maybe this will help. And you're supposed to feel energy from it, or at least, like, hold it and meditate with it. Which I haven't done, because awful.
You're not awful.
Yeah, but the point is, I bought these things, and I'm not even doing what I'm supposed to do with them. My one friend just said, put them on your windowsill and something will happen. So now they're all on my windowsill and nothing has happened. It's been months.
Or has it? Maybe it has and you just haven't realized
maybe
it
yet. Is it something bad?
Let's hope not.
I have a bunch of those things now. My friend bought me my birthstone for my birthday as well, which is very fitting.
Oh, nice.
So I have a garnet now.
Wait. When's your birthday again?
It's January. January 14th.
Oh.
My birthstone would be a garnet.
Oh. So my birthstone is the one that you're wearing around your neck.
The pearl? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm June.
Or you mean...
June. I thought I was Moonstone.
Yeah.
No,
but
maybe because I'm later June. Maybe it's...
Maybe.
Is it by month or by...
It's like by month, like... Well,
maybe
I'm
just
pretty sure
it's
a gem. Like the gem is the pearl for the birth month.
Maybe?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's the gem.
Maybe.
Not the stone.
Well, to be fair, it's okay because these probably are definitely not real pearls. But
so don't try to take
way.
Them. You can't
so
claim them as yours.
Aww.
Yeah.
It's Amelia's necklace.
Yeah.
But anyways, I want to move on to AJ before we run out of time.
Oh, yes.
Do you have a book you wanted to talk about?
Yes, but there's just one more thing about the Wicca. Amelia, you were talking about how it was like more focused on the seasons and stuff like that.
Yes.
Well, that I think that for all the viewers that out there that have seen the Frozen 2 movie, it's actually based on the Wicca because they were like these four spirits of the wind, the fire.
That's a thing, though. Like, that is actually a thing. After my mind was left reeling from the temple building instructions, I ended up actually skipping ahead in this book. Despite what I promised myself that I wouldn't do, I did skip ahead, and it got to talking about how to banish bad energy, also called spirits sometimes.
Know.
Bad energy, and how to invite, like, good energy or good spirits. I'm using air quotes. I think the spirits might just be another term for the good energy, but that's an interesting thing that was factored into there. And it's really interesting, because I feel like a lot of media portrays witchcraft in, like, not a great light, like in Hereditary or even The Witch, which are both horror movies. But real life, it's like these people are kind of just chilling with their altars, and and you give thanks to, like, you know, the seasons and the forces of nature that, like, you know, bring food and stuff. Not so much like a god, which I can understand why people would, like, prefer sometimes. But it's basically, it is. It's a very interesting book. Even if you're, like, not interested in, like, converting or anything, just to read about, it is very fascinating because it goes into the history of the religion as well.
Sounds very interesting. So AJ, what have you been reading?
So this time I actually did remember to bring a book, but sadly you don't have it on the table with us. So it's this book called A Tale by Letters of Liars and Leaks, and it's about the story of this fifth grade classroom that wants a new water fountain, but then the person, the director who's making it, who's designing the water fountain, goes into all sorts of crazy ideas, and then the fountain in the end, which is on the cover and the back cover, is so different from what the description was. And then in the end there was this letter that says, "Dear Florence, our cafeteria sink is beyond need of repair." And these are the instructions. And I'm like, oh my god, is there going to be a sequel? I wonder what the kitchen sink's going to look like. Is it going to be like this huge fountain that has soap, suds, geysers that are shooting out of it? I'm like, oh my god, what's going to happen?
happen. It's like, oh my god, let's hope to the Lord that there's a sequel. And I finished reading it, but I did skip some of the pages, which were just letters from one person who had a crush on this other person. And I'm like, I'm not interested in crushes. I just like, what's going to happen?
That's so funny. About the water fountain. Yeah. Earlier today, my friend was actually talking about how much she hates romance books. So it's funny that we both get into this topic at the same time, which she doesn't really have a reason for. I'm still reading Bitten, by the way. It's very slow going because I honestly don't like it, but I've been dared to read it. But
you don't want to let the dare go.
I can't admit defeat now. Yeah. I'm already on page 50. It's beyond the point of no return now. The point of no return is 25. This is something I have decided for myself.
Good luck.
But yeah, I'm still reading that. It's still weird.
Well, I have a couple books I can just quickly give a shout out to, because last week the American Library Association gave out their Youth Media Awards, which are like the big literary awards, or they're considered the big literary awards, at least with librarians in this country. And so the biggest awards are, because they're the ones that have been there the longest as well, are the Newbery Award, which is for writing, and the Caldecott Award, which is for illustration. And the Newbery Award went to The New Kid by Jerry Craft, which I've talked about on the show before.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
a really great graphic novel, comic book. And he's
give it to me, please.
And he's come to the Children's Book Festival a number of years, and he'll be here this year as well.
Wait, what is the author's name again?
Jerry Craft.
Jerry Craft.
Yeah, I think he came to our school last year, but like we had a sign that said, Jerry Craft is coming to the festival this year, and it's like a comic. And then one of the people was like, who's Jerry Craft? Jerry Craft is the author of The New Kid. Welcome, Jerry Craft.
Yay.
Yay.
Yeah, so it won the Newbery Medal. It also won the Coretta Scott King Author Award. And this year, not as part of this award ceremony, it won the Kirkus Prize for Young Readers Literature as well. So he is on a roll and very deserving, in my opinion.
That's great but that he's coming
cool,
to your school.
He also made history with the Newbery Medal because it's the first graphic novel ever to win that award.
Oh, that's great.
In the history of the
yeah.
award.
I love now it when, I really need to read it.
Oh, I love it when graphic novels like get recognition because it feels like they don't a lot. It feels like they're considered lesser than normal novels, which I can't stand when people imply that they're lesser than normal novels. That's cool that he's coming to your school. I miss the grades when like authors would come in to the classroom. Hopefully, maybe if we're lucky, since it is a creative writing class this year, maybe one more time before I get out of school, I'll be able to maybe have an author come in, since that's basically the basis of our class is writing. That would be great.
But what if you end up being one of the authors that gets to go to the grade?
Yeah. That would be great.
That means I would know an author.
That would be
hello.
Yeah,
really.
Know
that
an
would be
author.
Really. That would actually be really nice.
Hello, my future author of my favorite book that I'm going to.
So the one other book I wanted to give a shout out to was The Undefeated by Kwame Alexander and Kadir Nelson. Kwame Alexander has also been to the Hudson Children's Book Festival before, and this is a great book, and it's very appropriate for Black History Month. I'll read you the little description here. The Newbery Award-winning author of The Crossover pens an ode to Black American triumph and tribulation with art from a two-time Caldecott honoree. So now, with this award, it won the Caldecott for Kadir Nelson for the illustrations, and it was also a Newbery Honor book. So Kwame Alexander was awarded that. And it was a winner of the 2020 Coretta Scott King Illustrator Award. But it says, originally performed for ESPN's The Undefeated, this poem is a love letter to Black life in the United States. It highlights the unspeakable trauma of slavery, the faith and fire of the civil rights movement, and the grit, passion, and perseverance of some of the world's greatest heroes. The text is also peppered with references to the words of Martin Luther King Jr., Langston Hughes, Gwendolyn Brooks, and others, offering deeper insights into the accomplishments of the past while bringing stark attention to the endurance and spirit of those surviving and thriving in the present. And it's just a really lovely book. I love Kadir Nelson's illustrations. He's, in my opinion, one of the best children's book illustrators in the world. Basically any book he illustrates, I will get, because his work is just beautiful. But yeah, I'm very excited for them that they won those honors.
So for the last author, even if it were a story that he illustrated that you don't really like that much, would you still read it because of his illustrations?
If I didn't like the story that much? Well, I guess I wouldn't know until I read it.
Would you just look at the illustrations?
Sure. Yeah.
I've bought books to just look at the illustrations, too. That's basically all I do with my I Spy books now, is I look at the illustrations are really the right word. The sets, I guess. But I do have a book of fairy tales that I look at because they're all fairy tales that have been made into ballets. So the Nutcracker, Swan Lake. So the illustrations are beautiful in those, but I've never actually read the stories because I know them already. They're classics.
Yeah, but he's pretty selective of what he illustrates, I assume. So they're usually pretty good. He also has written some children's books as well, but he's primarily an illustrator or an artist. But anyways, we're out of time for today. But we'll be back next week to talk about some more books.
And I was just about to say something. See you, viewers.
Remember it for next time.
Yes.
We hope everyone has a great week, and
we hope that Amelia will be with us next week.
Yeah, I know. I've been gone a lot. I'm sorry.
No more getting sick. Anybody.
I'll try.
Never again.
I'll try.
My immune system is gone. Let's hope that we're all too healthy for that.
I've been through 3 years of high school. My immune system said we're done. Fourth year, we're leaving.
And scene.
Anyway, bye.
Have a good week. Happy reading.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for February the 20th, 2020. I'm Mike Clifford. A slugfest was predicted, and a slugfest it was, as the six remaining top contenders for the Democratic nomination for president took to the debate stage in Las Vegas. It was the first test of former Mayor Michael Bloomberg in a nationwide debate, and also saw those candidates in danger of falling out of the top three, taking the kind of shots that would keep them in the race for the White House. Meantime, early voting for the March 17th primary now underway for some in Illinois. A citizens group contends voters should wait until Election Day to cast a ballot.
Chicago Board of Elections' new Loop supersite opened on Wednesday and features new touchscreen voting machines and ballot scanners. Dr. Laura Chamberlain is with the group Clean Count Cook County, which believes the ballot marking devices have significant flaws.
They print a QR code on the ballot, and that's what's counted. Not the choices written out, but the QR code. And there's no smart app, there's no machine, it's proprietary. So the voters can never know what's actually being counted on their ballot.
The machines print a paper record of the voter's selections, but Chamberlain notes it doesn't show races the voter might have missed on the ballot. Election officials contend the new system is secure, and note a recorded image of the ballot is kept for 22 months. Mary Sherman reporting.
Clean Count Cook County believes Chicago and Cook County voters should wait until primary day, March the 17th, and cast a ballot at their local precinct. Traditional early voting begins statewide March the 2nd. And the workers who provide security at public and private buildings throughout New York City are looking for improved wages, benefits, and working conditions.
Service Employees International Union Local 32BJ began negotiations Wednesday to renew contracts with building owners and security contractors. The contracts will cover some 14,000 workers working at colleges, government buildings, museums, libraries, stadiums, and landmarks around the five boroughs. According to Union Vice President Dennis Johnston, although New York is one of the most expensive cities in the country, the average union security officer currently makes only about $37,000 a year.
As housing costs go up in neighborhoods where our members live, it's becoming harder and harder for members to survive. So we need solid wage increases that can help people keep up with that rising cost of living.
On Wednesday, the union presented its wage and benefits proposals to building owners and is opening negotiations with contractors today. The current contract expires on April 30th. I'm Andrea Sears reporting.
The union and employees will return to the bargaining table on March the 9th. This is PNS. Today's the last day for New Mexico residents to have their say before draft rules are written for the state to govern methane emissions. More from Ross Brown.
The state's energy and environment departments have held public listening sessions for several months and are expected to draft new rules for extraction companies by the end of 2020. Camilla Feibelman with the Sierra Club Rio Grande chapter believes the new rules should include the strongest possible safeguards for public health.
Especially for communities who are on the front lines of these issues, if you have an oil and gas operation just outside your house, you can be exposed to any number of compounds.
The fracking process used by oil and gas companies causes methane to leak, vent, and flare into the atmosphere, and associated pollutants can cause various health problems.
Last month, the New Mexico Oil and Gas Association reported record oil and gas revenues that account for nearly 50% of the state's general fund. Minnesota saw a dip last year in a number of solar industry jobs. That's according to a new report from a nonpartisan research group. More from Mike Moen.
After seeing gains in 2017 and 2018, Minnesota experienced a nearly 6% decline in solar job growth last year. That finding was included in the annual Solar Job Census issued by the Solar Foundation. The drop runs counter to growth at the national level, but the foundation's Ed Gilliland says national numbers are recovering from solar tariffs issued by the Trump administration in 2018.
There's now certainty in the market. The global prices have actually continued to decline, and they've declined enough to offset those tariffs.
Gilliland says Minnesota's drop can be attributed to a slowdown in the state's community solar sector. Specifically, he says reimbursement rate declines were a factor. The report says nationally there was a gain of more than 5,600 solar jobs, while Minnesota lost 267 jobs.
Finally, our Suzanne Potter tells us farm worker advocacy groups say a bill on farm worker rights just passed the state Senate, and it's a good first step.
SB 6261 would get rid of a loophole that exempts nonprofit contractors from the Farm Labor Contractor Act, which sets minimum standards for the treatment of farm workers. Andrea Schmidt, a staff attorney for Columbia Legal Services, says all field workers deserve adequate pay, water, shade, and bathrooms, regardless of which company hires them.
The organization bringing the largest number of H-2A workers by far is a nonprofit called WAFLA, formerly known as the Washington Farm Labor Association.
WAFLA opposes the bill, even though lawmakers cut a section that would have put in place strong penalties for retaliation against workers who speak out against abuses.
Washington State is home to an estimated 100,000 farm workers. I'm Mike Clifford for Public News Service. We are a member and we're listener-supported. We're online at publicnewsservice.org.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. I'm Philip Graham. Amelia Teasdale is reporting for the Columbia Paper about the February 6th meeting of the Chatham Town Board and the discussion that focused on the subject of short-term rentals and the proposed updates to the town's zoning law. Henry Corson moderated the conversation about STRs. The proposed law defines a short-term rental investment property as, and I quote, a property that is not occupied by the owner and is primarily used for income, end quote. The law, as drafted, would require an issuance of a special use permit by the town planning board and could be established in any of the town's zoning districts. Corson began by asking the audience to identify the benefits and drawbacks of permitting STRs. Several audience members who rent out their property or rooms in their homes on a short-term basis spoke about the benefits of the extra income as well as the jobs that are created in the area. A resident of North Chatham said that a drawback was that she wants to know her neighbors and wants to see a residency component in any regulation on STRs. One person expressed opposition to the new regulations, saying that she felt her short-term rental was already regulated as a home business. Corson said she would write up the notes on the discussion and the board would discuss the issue further at their meetings and workshops in the coming months. Comments on the regulations can be submitted to Town Clerk Beth Ann Ripple via email at townclerk@chathamnewyork.us. Read the full story in the Columbia Paper. Hudson Mayor Kamal Johnson, February 19th, announced four members to the Hudson Tourism Board in a statement posted to the city website. Christian Keck, proprietor of W.M. Farmer & Sons, Tamar Adler, founder of Friends of Oakdale, Chris McManus, principal and founder of Narrate Marketing, and Phyllis Soyak, co-founder of the Creative Citizen Alliance. The Common Council this week appointed Hannah Black, Celia Graham, Sydney Long, and Kate Tracy to the board. The new group is led by 3rd Ward Alderman Calvin Lewis. Keck and Long served on the previous board. And you can read the full press release at cityofhudson.org. Larry Rulison is reporting for the Times Union. A new audit by State Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli's office found that New York has greatly improved its enforcement and tracking of the Do Not Call law, legislation intended to protect consumers from harassing telemarketing and robocalls. In 2018, DiNapoli's office issued a set of recommendations to improve enforcement, including adding staff and using technologies and tapping into federal resources to track consumer complaints and crack down on new cases of abuse. DiNapoli said, and I quote, "Laws are ineffective if they are not enforced, which is why I'm gratified the state is now making a serious effort to go after illegal robocallers. The Department of State has acted on my office's recommendations and seems to be getting its arms around the problem," end quote. The original 2001 law has been amended frequently, and a proposed 2020 update would double the maximum penalty for telemarketing firms from $11,000 per violation to $22,000. Consumers must list the numbers they want blocked on a Federal Trade Commission registry. DiNapoli's audit did not say how many new enforcement actions have been taken or how many fines have been assessed, but it does say it is now easier for consumers to make full complaints. And you can read the full story.